ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ओम नमो
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 10, entitled Maharaj Rahugana Meets Jada Bharat. This is text 25. Na vikriya vishva surit sakhasya samyena vitabhimates tavapi mahat vimanat स्वकृतात् धी माधृन् नांक्षति अधूरात् अपि शूलपाणिः। न विक्रिया विश्वसुहृत्सखस्य, न विक्रिया विश्वसुहृत्सखस्य साम्येन वीताभिमतेस्तवापि, साम्येन वीताभिमतेस्तवापि महद्विमानात् स्वकृताद्भिमाद्रिन्, महद्विमानात् स्वकृताद्भिमाधिन् नांक्षत्यधूरादपि शूलपाणि, नांक्षत्यधूरादपि शूलपाणि। न विक्रिया विश्वसुहृत्सखस्य साम्येन वीताभिमतेस्तवापि महद्विमानात् स्वकृताद्धिमाद्रिन् नांक्षत्यधूरादपि शूलपाणि। न विक्रिया विश्वसुहृत्सखस्य साम्येन वीताभिमतेस्तवापि महद्विमानात् स्वकृताधिमाद्रिन् नांक्षत्यधूरादपि शूलपाणि। Let's read the word to word translation. Na, not. Vikriya, material transformation. Vishvasurit,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a friend to everyone. Sakhasya, of you, the friend. Samyena, because of your mental equilibrium. Vita abhimatehe, who has completely forsaken the bodily concept of life. Tava, your. Api, indeed. Mahadvimanat, of insulting a great devotee. Swakritat, from my own activity. He, certainly. Madrik, a person like me. Nangshati, will be destroyed. adurat. Very soon. Api. Certainly. Shulapanihi. Even though as powerful as Lord Shiva. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O my dear Lord, you are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the friend of all living entities. You are therefore equal to everyone, and you are free from the bodily conception. Although I have committed an offense by insulting you, I know that there is no loss or gain for you due to my insult. You are fixed in your determination, but I have committed an offense. Because of this, even though I may be as strong as Lord Shiva, I will be vanquished without delay due to my offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Purport. Maharaj Rahugana was very intelligent and cautious of the inauspicious effects arising from insulting a Vaishnava. He was therefore very anxious to be excused by Jarabharat. Following in the footsteps of Maharaj Rahugana, everyone should be very cautious not to commit an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Srila Vrindavandas Thakur in Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhyalila chapter, Madhyakhanda chapter 13 says, Shulapani samayati bhakta nindakare bhagavata pramana tathapi siramare hena vaishnavera ninde sarvajna hai sejanere adhapata sarvashatrakai. Even if one is as strong as Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand, one will nonetheless fall down from his spiritual position if he tries to insult a Vaishnava. That is the verdict of all scriptures. He also says that in Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya Khanda chapter 22, Vaishnavera ninda kari beka yara gana tara raksha samarthya nahika kona jana shulapani sama yadi Vaishnavera ninde tathapiha nashahaya yaha kshastra vrinde ihana maniya ye sujana ninda kare janme janme se papishtha daiva dosha more. One who blasphemes a Vaishnava cannot be protected by anyone. Even if a person is as strong as Lord Shiva, if he blasphemes a Vaishnava, he is sure to be destroyed. This is the verdict of all the Shastras. If one does not care for the verdict of the Shastras and dares blaspheme a Vaishnava, he suffers life after life because of this. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of 5th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Discussion Between Jadabharat and Maharaj Rahugana. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. सो वेलकम टू दिस मॉर्निंग भागवतम क्लास एंड वी आर टुवर्ड्स द एंड ऑफ द चैप्टर चैप्टर 10 of this fifth canto, where the discussion of Maharaj Rahugana, between Maharaj Rahugana and Jadabharat continues. And the tables turn completely. Maharaj Rahugana, who's considering himself to be a king and looks down at Jadabharat, thinking that he's a Shudra, now is almost on his falling on his hands, knees and legs, considering Jadabharat to be his spiritual master and begging forgiveness at his lotus feet. This is ultimately after understanding the exalted position of Jadabharat. Jadabharat is an exalted personality, very exalted, but he's externally covering himself as if he's a dullard and doing everything topsy-turvy, doing things in a wrong manner so that nobody comes close to him. He has no friends, no attachments, no contacts, nothing. So that his only attachment is Shri Krishna. So in this verse, we find that Maharaj Rahugana, simply by the presence and the association of Jadabharata, has invoked a lot of spiritual credit and mercy, so to speak, because of which his intelligence is back in place. So he says, my dear Lord, you are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the friend. You are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the friend of all living entities. So the first address to the Supreme Lord is that he is the friend of all living entities. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam nyatva maham shantim ruchati. That by knowing that Krishna is the ultimate benefactor, of all spiritual sacrifices and ceremonies, and that he's the proprietor of everything that exists, existed, and will exist, and ultimately he's the well-wishing, ever well-wishing friend of every living entity, because he's seated as the super soul next to us. We are the spirit soul, and Krishna is sitting as the super soul next to us. And anyone who understands and realizes these three truths, Krishna says, will ultimately achieve peace in this world. Bhoktaram yatne tapasam, sarvaloka maheshwaram, suridam sarvabhutanam. These three principles, if we understand, imbibe and realize and experience in the path of our spiritual life, that Krishna is ultimately the enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer, and everything that exists is meant only for his pleasure. If we happen to enjoy something, or we happen to desire to enjoy something, then it's compared to be that of the thief mentality, where something belongs to someone else, but we want to artificially claim proprietorship and the enjoying spirit over it. So ultimately, Krishna is the creator, maintainer, destroyer, and therefore the proprietor and the enjoyer. And not that he's just opulently and majestically royal, but at the same time as an ever well-wishing friend in the spirit of pure love and proximity, Krishna's presence seated next to us as our ever well-wishing friend. And following the footsteps of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada always used to sign off as your ever well-wishing friend. That the pure living and the pure devotee is so dear to Krishna that he imbibes the qualities of Krishna. He imbibes and he inherits the spirit of compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna burns in compassion seeing the living entities. Therefore, he comes down as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And taking that compassion far and wide, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada came and spread this Raja Vidya, the king of all knowledge, that of Krishna Bhakti, in every town and village. The scriptures in different places have proclaimed, and there's a foretelling that there'll be a great personality who will come and walk in the age of Kali Yuga, who will spread Krishna Bhakti far and wide. In fact, Madhvacharya also, during his era, which is like 1,000 years ago, he had predicted that a great personality will descend and he will spread the message of Krishna Bhakti far and wide. And therefore, even those in South India, those who follow Madhvacharya, they highly regard Srila Prabhupada, because they understand Srila Prabhupada to be that future prediction of Madhvacharya. Even in the Chaitanya Mangala, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted, according to Lochan Das Thakur, that my Senapati Bhakta, my commander-in-chief, will come down and he will spread this message far and wide. So it's pretty evident that what Srila Prabhupada has accomplished, and the unbelievably spiritual achievement that Srila Prabhupada, this amazing feat that Srila Prabhupada has been blessed with and he has achieved in 12 years of his mortal pastimes. Nobody, no acharya in the past has done it. Not that we compare Srila Prabhupada and put him greater than Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, but even as far as the preaching is concerned, Srila Prabhupada has done way more than any other acharya in any sampradaya. So we are very, very grateful. So we say that Krishna is our friend, but that is just theoretically. We cannot see that. Of course, we can see as gratitude, well, Krishna is giving me food, Krishna is giving me shelter, and Krishna is giving me all of this. But ultimately, because our hearts are hard rock, we cannot perceive how Krishna is our friend. But we can definitely perceive how Srila Prabhupada, who is a pure devotee, is our friend. That although we haven't seen Srila Prabhupada, except for Mukta Prabhu, we haven't seen Srila Prabhupada, but still we are touched by his compassion. That we don't, like, he didn't know us, but he still did so much for us. And we know him, and what are we doing back for him? You know, it's unbelievable. Like, when you know somebody to the extent that you could go to help that person, what to speak of not knowing a person and still doing something unbelievable like this? You know, holding that person's hand and letting him cross the ocean of material existence is the greatest welfare activity. Therefore, in this verse, it is said that Vaishnavas are special. especially pure Vaishnavas who come down from the spiritual world are like jewels on earth. Mother Earth gets decorated by the footprints of such a Vaishnav. Bhavatvida Bhagavata Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantasthena Gadabhrita. Canto 1, Chapter 13, Bhagavatam. That the presence of a pure Vaishnav is so powerful that he or she can transform even a so-called pilgrimage place into a bigger pilgrimage place. So when we offend such a Vaishnav, forget it. There is no question of getting Krishna's mercy. And recently we had a discussion, a detailed, a technical discussion, so to speak, on Vaishnav Aparad. So I won't run through all of that. But just a few examples on this topic. We find the example of Maharaj Ambarish, which is striking in the Srimad Bhagavatam. A great personality, great king, and who served Krishna through all his senses. And here was Durvasa. Durva actually is a special type of grass. And asa means the juice. So he who drank only the juice of that specific grass, he was that austere. I mean, can you imagine? He never ate anything. He just drank the juice from that specific grass. So he was called as Durvasa Muni. And Muni because he didn't speak much. Mauna means the spirit of silence. So he was Durvasa Muni, he who was silent. And he was very austere. And naturally, whenever there is material austerity, there's another cobra-like head which rises in our heart called as pride. With spiritual austerity and with the right attitude, that cobra is always subdued because Krishna dances on the head of Kali. But when it is material austerity, we are depending on the self and not on Krishna, so pride just rises like this. And Durvasa Muni, he got so puffed up that he went on to blaspheme somebody like Ambarish. The nature of pride is such that three things happen. One, we don't recognize our mistake when you're not told about it. Second, when you're informed about your mistake, you don't accept it. And third, the person who comes and informs, we have a negative feeling about that person. Because that person is attacking our palace of pride. Anybody who harms, that's our enemy. Ooh. And somebody who blows the bubble of pride, he's my friend. Because he's agreeing to my tantrums. While anybody who comes with the needle prick is my enemy. A pure devotee, because he's prideless, has nothing to hide. So anyone and everyone who comes, he embraces. And sees that Krishna is sitting in the heart of that devotee. Mama mana mandire raho nishidina Krishna murari, Sri Krishna murari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the body is like a temple, the heart is like the altar, and Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha is sitting in the altar of our heart. So a pure devotee sees all the living entities like that. Oh goodness, his body is a temple. His body is a temple. Because in the courtyard of his heart, Radha Gopi Vallabha is sitting. So therefore, they are the friend, ever well-wishing friend of all living entities. But as soon as we have something to hide behind us, something, it could be hypocrisy, it could be pride, it could be vengeance, it could be envy, something that you want to hide. You know, as they say in Greek, Janus-faced, having two faces. So having one teeth to bite and one teeth to bark. So when we have something to hide, there's somebody who doesn't see it, then we embrace that person. But there's somebody, oops, what's there behind that? Is there something that you're hiding? Oh, you're my enemy because you're attacking my, you know, my negative, so to speak. So it's invariably when we are provoked or by some agitation, it's our problem and not theirs. Like when we have a wound here and somebody comes and touches that wound, it pricks for us. It's not their problem. It's because we have a wound here and they're touching, therefore it's hurting. Imagine we didn't have a wound and they're touching, there's no problem. So there's no problem with their touch. It's the problem that I have a wound here. So similarly, when we have a wound in our consciousness through pride, any provocation will just agitate us. And then we are we look down to that person as an enemy. And then what happens is the worst thing. We go to attack that person. Just like a snake. You know, as soon as somebody comes close, it attacks without thinking twice. So one, we don't see our mistake. Second, if somebody points out that mistake, we don't believe them. And third, because they pointed out, Now we are envious against them and we go to attack them. Now somebody else might come and say, Prabhu, now you're blaspheming a Vaishnava. Or Mataji, you're blaspheming a Vaishnava. So in return, we have two defenses. To the offenses, we have our defenses. So the first defense is, the person comes and says, well, you're offending a Vaishnava. So the first defense is that, well, he's not a Vaishnava. I'm speaking about that person. That person is not a Vaishnava. Because, and all the different points come up where we postmodern their character and pick up all the different points. And this, look at this. If she was a Vaishnava, she wouldn't do this. If he was a Vaishnava, he wouldn't say this. Now, things which don't even exist, we make a mountain of a molehill. And then we just build on and on and on and on, all just so that we could protect the pinprick of the bubble-like pride. Now, if we don't use this, we have another defense. If we accept that person as a Vaishnava, then the second defense is, well, what I'm speaking is truth. I'm not making it up. That person actually did this, or that person said this. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in a book called as Bhakti Loka, says that in either of these cases, we are not. Krishna has not given us the authority to find faults. I'll just conclude here. Last example, very striking example by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Very interesting. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once in his Gaudiya Math came across this this problem of constant fights and misunderstandings and aparad, so to speak, just talking, backbiting, so to speak. He speaks so much that, oh, it's not right, it's not right. But as soon as offline, somebody comes and says, you know what? And the conversation actually starts from there. I don't know what happened. And the doors of Vaishnava Prada are wide open. So are the doors of hell. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he noticed something like this. So he called all his disciples and he said, there is this person who works in a restaurant. He's just giving a nice anecdote. He's fabricating something and then explaining something out of the model of the story. So he said, there is this person who works in a restaurant and he works like a waiter. And what is his job? He carries meat. He's a vegetarian, he doesn't like meat, but he carries meat because he gets paid and he has to maintain his family. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then asked a question. He said, now tell me, if there is a person who doesn't get paid and still walks into this restaurant and wants to be a waiter, hates meat, but still carries it around, would you call him intelligent? And they all said, no, why would anybody do that? Bhaktisiddhanta said, then why are you all doing it? In the sense, he said, I am the spiritual master, so I have to find fault. So I am like that waiter who gets paid because it's my job. It's my duty as a spiritual master. So I have to carry the meat of the faults of my disciples just so that I can correct them. Now all of you aren't even gurus. And you still walk into this restaurant and carry the meat of the faults of all these Vaishnavas around. All of you are fools. They put their head down in shame. It's very interesting how Bhaktisiddhanta did that. So it's very very instructive and very interesting at the same time that whenever this occasion comes of, or rather whenever this point comes of Vaishnava Aparad, there's a previous verse we recently discussed where Maharaj Rahugana says, I am ready to be burned down by the trident of Lord Shiva or be attacked by the thunderbolt of Indra. I'm not even afraid of being drowned in the ocean, but all that I'm afraid of is offending a Vaishnava. We discussed that this material world is like an apartment or a big structure caught on fire. We sing this every morning. Samsara dava nalalidha loka, which means samsara means material world. Dava nala means a forest fire. So this material world is like a forest fire where there's fire outside, not just of the temperature. If you're in New England, there's no fire here. It's just ice all over, but snow all over. But the heat that comes down through envy, through jealousy, through interactions, the heat within, the heat of pride, the heat of lust, the heat of anger, And of course, the heat of the temperature. So it's totally caught on fire. And the only fire exits, the emergency exits in this building of this material world are the Vaishnavas. Because they are the ones who give you books. They are the ones who give you prasad. They are the ones who give you the holy name. They are the ones who give you harikatha. They are the ones who dress the deities so that you come in and get benefited. So this material world is caught on fire, but the emergency exits are the Vaishnavas. Now what happens when you offend the Vaishnavas? What happens is that these doors get jammed. So the only exit out of this material world are the exits of the Vaishnavas. And we offend them, those doors are jammed. What happens? We are trapped. Ultimately, we are burned down. So this horrible forest fire of fault finding, which is the tipping point after which all the other evils come up, should be carefully avoided. Therefore, you find that in all the offenses, like the offenses to the holy name, what is the first offense we read every morning? To blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their life for propagating the holy name of the Lord. But interestingly, by reading it for a million days, you won't overcome that mentality. We sincerely have to strive. We could read it for like 5 seconds every morning. To blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated and propagating the holy name of the Lord. Done. But how much do we really introspect about it? To blaspheme a devotee who have dedicated their life. And especially when we stay in the temple, it's so dangerous because we are staying with all of them who have dedicated their lives. So it's like walking on the edge of the sword. Either way you fall, and if you walk, you're still bleeding. You know. So we have to be very cautious. So I'll stop here as far as the Bhagavatam is concerned. I want to take something very interesting for the next 15 minutes. Yesterday was Papamochini Ekadashi and also the appearance day of Ayendra Prabhu. It was the 63rd appearance of this wonderful personality, dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So for the next, maybe not 15, but next 5 to 10 minutes, I would like to share some of the life instances and pastimes of Ayendra Prabhu that I was fortunate enough to listen from his near and dear ones, and, you know, by Krishna's mercy, get all of that nectar. So, of course, there are different aspects in Ayendra Prabhu's life, right? Starting from his New York days, but I won't cover all of that because devotees are pretty much aware of that. But I'll just jump to his stay in Vrindavan. So Ayendra Prabhu appeared in 1953 and he left this world in 2010. That's good 57 years of service. And he served in many places. He was head pujari. He was in Washington, D.C. He was born in Virginia, of course. He served in New York. And we all know of the story of his big truck, the bus that he had. Oh, so wonderful. That he cut through and made a big decorated altar on it. And he would drive this bus for like 10 hours every day in the streets of New York. So he constructed a stage in the bus with the models of the reincarnation that you find on the front page of the Signs of Self-Realization, right from a baby up to the... So going from the womb to the tomb, showing that description. And he would lecture to people. He would say, look, you're here. Very soon you might go there. So chant Hare Krishna. You know, and it was pretty inspiring because I heard Bhagavad Puran was saying, and I heard even from Ram Roy Prabhu, some things. Recently, I was in Vrindavan, so I could hear some of the extra nectar from Bhagavad Puran. He was always ecstatic. So he was telling me about how people used to, professionals used to go off to work at 7 in the morning, and they would find this fire up brahmachari singing and playing the harmonium at 7 in the morning. And they would come back like at 5 in the evening, and they would still find him in some place or the other. And he would have amplifiers in the bus and just drive through the streets of the busy streets of New York and flood the whole city of New York by the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So after all of those services, and he was a leading book distributor too, finally in 1986, at the age of 33, he came to Vrindavan. Of course, he was initiated by Prabhupada in 1972 at the age of... 1972-73, he was 20 years old. on Nityananda Trayodashi. So he received, I think 1974, he was 21 years old, if I'm not wrong. Nityananda Trayodashi, 1974. So he received his Diksha from Prabhupada. And 1986, he came to Vrindavan. It's very interesting. Srila Prabhupada had started this 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan during his mortal pastimes, where Prabhupada desired that there should be 24 hours of kirtan in Krishna Balaram Mandir, Vrindavan. But again, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, in a few years, that stopped completely because devotees maybe weren't so fired up as much as they were during Prabhupada's presence. And to fill up the space, they got in professional singers who were paid for singing. They used to come in like classical singers and they did it as a job. And just so that Prabhupada's 24-hour kirtan mission should be on, the temple president used to pay them, hook or crook, let them come and sing. But when Ayanda Prabhu came in 1986, he saw all this happening and then he told the temple president, this is not right. Paying somebody for kirtan or for chanting or even for lecturing for that matter is not right. Especially in the temples or in public places. This has to be as compassion, not as a job. So the temple president said, well, we have nobody to fill in. And Ayendra Prabhu said, I would like to try. I would like to try and do the service because Prabhupada desired and we have to put this together. And they didn't even have mridangas those days. I mean, the department was like completely worn out. Nobody looked at the 24-hour department, so they didn't even have mridangas. So Ayendra Prabhu, very interestingly, he had these ankle bells that dancers use, you know, especially women. They're loud ankle bells. So he would tie one of that to his feet and play the harmonium and sing and with his feet give the beats. So the harmonium would give the notes and the ankle bells would give the rhythm. And he started off like that. And he had this couple of other devotees, Nitai Prabhu and other devotees who helped him. And they would sing like 8-hour shifts every day. 2-3 devotees coming together, 8-10 hours per head and finish the 24-hour slot. Okay, it's too much on the throat. And you have to have this intense taste for chanting the holy name. Imagine nobody around you. And you chant for like 10 hours on your harmonium with no mridanga. And there used to be kartals, of course. So very, very challenging. And people, especially the devotees, they didn't trust this too much. They said, well, maybe it might go on for a few days and might stop. But this was serious, intense. Ayendra Prabhu started on Vijayadashami. That's like a few days before the start of Kartik. And it is believed that's the day when Ramchandra won over Ravana. So whatever you start on that day, you'll always be victorious. So Ayendra Prabhu took that date and he started this 24-hour kirtan. He didn't go for like, let me start slow, 6 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, 16 hours. He didn't try for it. He just aimed so high. He started off 24 out of nowhere. And then devotees got to know that this was serious business because sannyasis used to get up at 2 o'clock at night to worship their shaligram and come down the brahmachari ashram and go to the other end to take their bath. And they could hear, they saw that even the security, the guard, he used to be like dozing off, literally at the gate. But there was this ankle bell sound, celestial personality, as if it was coming from the groves of Vrindavan, a gopi singing in the groves of Vrindavan for Radha Krishna. Ayendra Prabhu was sitting all by himself. The harmonium was singing, the ankle bells were singing, and of course Ayendra Prabhu was singing all by himself. The doors of the altar were closed. There was nobody to impress. There was no feedback coming from the audience. It was just purely his love for the holy name. And slowly seeing that intensity, as Prabhupada says, purity is the force, people started joining in. People started joining in, and then Ayendra Prabhu started reducing his shifts. And finally, towards the end part of his life, Ayendra Prabhu used to do the 5-7 shift in the evening. And oh God, that used to be like craziness, total craziness. People used to come internationally to come in. It was like a performance. He had, those who've been in Vrindavan, Mother Gopalila would definitely have lots to share in this regard. Ayendra Prabhu used to sit on this one square tile in the floors of Krishna Balaram Mandir, and his harmonium and his singing. And those who have heard Ayendra Prabhu know that he wasn't like one of those materially soft, slow, melodious sort of singer. He was like real business, Kirtan revolution. He was a soldier, yelling, screaming the holy name from the bottom of his heart. And he had this team around him, which were like, you know, his gopas, so to speak. They were all supporting him and singing with him. And it was a total, total performance. The temple went up and down when Ayendra Prabhu sang, almost as if the walls and the pillars used to crack chanting the holy name. That tempo, that environment, that atmosphere, goodness, you can't describe that. That once you taste that, you lose taste for all mundane music. There's this Russian devotee who takes care of Ayendra Prabhu's room now, whom I was speaking to, and he said that I was addicted to all sorts of drugs. Everything, and he was naming, and I hadn't heard any of them. he was saying this, and it was very powerful. I love to stay high forever. And some devotee told him that I think you should go to Vrindavan and listen to this devotee, Ayendra Prabhu. So he took a flight and was sponsored, and he came to Vrindavan, and he heard Ayendra Prabhu for like days together, the 2-hour shifts in the evening. And I literally remember his expression. He went like this. He told me, I had all the intoxicants possible, but after I heard Ayendra Prabhu's kirtan, off it went. That was the biggest intoxicant I had. That was his kirtan. And now he's a brahmachari. He left everything and he takes care of Ayendra Prabhu's deities in Krishna Balaram Mandir. So that's how powerful his kirtan was. His attachment to chanting, unbelievable. He chanted over 64 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra every day. And a few months before he left this world, he just intensified to over 120 rounds. Over 120 rounds. It's not an understatement. He did a lot. He did a lot of rounds. In fact, there used to be this notice on his door. Do not disturb me unless it's really urgent. You know, and even when his mridanga player Gopal used to knock, Ayendra Prabhu used to open. He'd say, anything urgent? Quick. I haven't finished my rounds. And what he means by not finishing his rounds is not 16. He did a lot of rounds. And either his fingers used to be serving the harmonium, which he called Ayendra's screaming baby. He always had this traveling harmonium which he would put on his hips. And he would carry as if the mother would carry her baby. And it used to sing when he sang. So he literally wrote on it, Ayendra's screaming baby. So he was very innovative. You know, he had all of this. I have so many pastimes to describe. Time's not on my side. Anyway, so his fingers used to be on the harmonium or into the japa beads or dressing Radha Shamsundar. Every Saturday morning, he used to dress Radha Shamsundar, and it was so artistic. He had this unique style of garlanding the deities. Generally the garlands, if you see, go around the neck like this. But Ayendra Prabhu used to put the garlands as if it used to be the Brahminical thread. It went around the body and came back like this. So as soon as you see the pictures where Krishna is dressed up like that, where the garland goes this way, you know that's dressed by Ayendra Prabhu. That was like his trademark style. And he used to love the deities, especially when the photographer used to come to click pictures. Ayendra Prabhu used to come out and look at his deities like this. And he used to tell his photographer, wait, they're not complete. He used to go, you know, pull on the curtains and then again do something and come out. And again look. And for the onlooker, there was no difference. But Ayendra Prabhu was so artistic and he was so meticulous. He would say, oh, the locks of Krishna's hair now should be seen. They were missing. They were on the back side of his shoulder. Now they're on the front side of the shoulder and things like that. It's a very wonderful personality. Unfortunately, due to a tragic fire accident, he left this world. And only after he left this world did many of the devotees realize what a jewel they lost. Because in his presence, they always felt, well, Ayendra Prabhu was special, but how special he was. We never realize when a devotee is around us and we don't realize their importance, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. But as soon as they leave, their transcendental qualities, their nature, the things they did, just shower realizations in our hearts saying how great they were. There was one Mataji whom I got to speak to, and she was crying as she was talking about Ayendra Prabhu. It's interesting how he was a brahmachari and still she was a Mataji and she was crying for him. The reason is, her daughter pushed her mother, that's this Mataji, let's go and listen to Ayendra Prabhu this evening. And the mother said, well, I have some things to do and buy things from Lohi Bazaar, the shop in Vrindavan. I have some things to buy. Maybe we can sit tomorrow. And guess what? That evening was the last kirtan that Ayendra Prabhu ever did. That night he left this world. So Ayendra Prabhu left the world at around 10:30 at night. And there was a tragic fire accident in his room. And he was found paying obeisances behind his deities. Can you imagine? We talk about maybe someday, some life, we remember Krishna. And we theoretically talk about the fact that we should remember Krishna at the time of death. And here was a devotee who left his body in the land of Vrindavan, in his room, which was filled with over 3,000 Shaligram Shilas. And he had Gornithai deities this big, like 4.5 feet maybe. He could literally sit and he used to embrace them sometimes. He literally loved them. So in their presence and behind them, there's a fire accident. We would try to come out, but he just surrendered. And he was, interestingly, he was found in this position when he left his body. So when the body was also put to rest, the body was, externally the body was still in the Dandavat position. They tried to do a samadhi for him, but he said, no, my body should be burned and the ashes should be put on the banks of the Yamuna. They asked him, why? Why do you want it? Why not a samadhi in Vrindavan? His reason was very interesting. He said, if you put me to samadhi, it'll take many, 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 many years for all the atoms and molecules of my body to settle in Vrindavan. But if you burn me, off it goes. Burn my body, of course. If you cremate my body, what's going to happen is all the atoms, all the dust of my body settles in the dust of Vrindavan, and I'm happy, you know. So he loved Vrindavan Dham, he loved Harinam, and he loved Radhesham. These three things which are very poetically, rhythmically tied together. Harinam, Brajadham, and Radhesham. So in that way, there were so many pastimes. One last before I wrap up. His love for Vrindavan was so intense. He never wanted to leave Vrindavan. Never, 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 never. He developed some health problems and the doctors in Vrindavan couldn't detect it. So one devotee said, let's go to Delhi, which is like 3 hours from Vrindavan. Let's go to Delhi and there are good doctors. Ayendra Prabhu said, never. What if I go to Delhi and I leave my body there? I'm not going to come to Delhi. I'm good here. So they contacted the Ayurvedic doctor in Delhi and told him, Ayendra Prabhu cannot come to Vrindavan. Could you come to cannot come to Delhi? Could you send the could you come to Vrindavan and treat him? He said, well, I'm busy, I can't come. So then the devotees contacted him and said, he cannot come and meet you, you cannot go and meet him. Could you at least send the medicines? So he said, okay. So he sent the medicines to Ayendra Prabhu and he was supposed to take that with banana. So Ayendra Prabhu was happy. He said, okay, now I don't have to leave Vrindavan and I get my medicines. Then he asked, what are the ingredients in that medicine? And Ayendra Prabhu also had this side of being so austere. Oh, he was too austere. Especially the 4 months of Chaturmas, going up to Kartik, the fourth month. He would before Chaturmas, he used to be this plump Ayendra Prabhu, chubby cheeks, dimple chin, rosy lips. You know, literally, well built. He had a nice belly and, you know, very nice to look at. But after this Chaturmas, he used to be so skinny and very thin because he ate once a day. And he had this weird things that, or unique things, so to speak, that he followed. He read it in some scripture that by eating once a day in a specific fashion, you get Krishna during Chaturmas. So he did it. He used to have his plate put up like this and prasadam on the top of that. And he ate his food like this. He would tie his hands to his back and eat like this. I mean, it's now we would say, oh, come on, who would do all that? But his spirit was, anything and everything that when practice gives me Krishna, I would do it. For getting Krishna, if I have to jump from the top, I would. That was his spirit of surrender. So anyway, during Chaturmas, he gave up many ingredients. He would never have it. So when he realized that this medicine had that, he said, forget it, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to break my chaturmas because of this. So he was very austere and his love for Vrindavan was deep. One devotee once came to him and said, Prabhu, please give me your blessings. I have got a job in Singapore and I have to leave Vrindavan and I am going to Singapore. So Ayendra Prabhu said, are you crying? Do you feel like crying? So the devotee said, for what? He said, that you're leaving Vrindavan? The devotee said, I am feeling, but honestly, I'm not crying. So Ayendra Prabhu said, if you're not crying while leaving Vrindavan, you were never in Vrindavan. Intense. He said, if you don't cry in separation from Vrindavan, you were never in Vrindavan. So we are talking about a personality who literally was an embodiment of all the qualities that you find in the Shastras. Another day, one devotee came and he said, Prabhu, I have to leave Vrindavan. Please give me your blessings. So Ayendra Prabhu said, okay, I give you my blessings. And then he left. And after this devotee left, Ayendra Prabhu told another mridanga player of Vrindavan. He said that, Prabodhananda Saraswati says in Vrindavan Mahimamrita, O fool, do you know when you're going to give up your body? You could give up your body as an infant, as a middle-aged man, or as an old-aged man. Therefore, never leave Vrindavan. So Ayendra Prabhu said, I don't know when I'm going to leave my body. Therefore, I never leave Vrindavan. You know, so that was his love. And one last, for sure. He was going from Vrindavan to Delhi in his car, the temple car. And as they were leaving the temple and they were on the road, there was this mosquito, this insect, this fly, which was in the car, which was trapped in the car. Around Ayendra Prabhu. So Ayendra Prabhu tried opening the window and tried pushing the insect, the fly out, and pull it up. So another devotee said, yeah, I understood, it was really disturbing, isn't it? That's the reason you wanted it to fly back. Ayendra Prabhu said, no. The reason I pulled down the window is because this fly is a resident of Vrindavan and I don't want to take the sin of taking the maidservant of Radharani away from Vrindavan to Delhi. I am ready to go to Delhi, but this insect, I am forcing it to go to Delhi. Why should I? You go to Vrindavan. You stay in Vrindavan. So there's so many pastimes which could be spoken about him, but time is not on my side. So I'll stop here and we can pray to Ayendra Prabhu and we can pray to Srila Prabhupada, who has given us the gift of so many staunch, exalted disciples. It could be Ayendra Prabhu in Vrindavan, it could be Dinabandhu Prabhu in Vrindavan, it could be Jananivas Pankajangri Prabhu in Mayapur, it could be the Sannyasis, it could be all these exalted Grihasthas, Brahmachari, Sannyasi disciples of Prabhupada. They are such a gift, such an example that we could look up to. So we pray to Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar of Vrindavan and of course Radha Gopivallabha of Boston that we imbibe at least 1% in some aspect of Ayendra Prabhu's devotion so that we go back home back to Godhead very soon. Another thing, as we say back home back to Godhead, Ayendra Prabhu had this habit of saying back home back to Godhead ki jai. Sooner the better ki jai. No later than this life ki jai. At the end of this life for sure ki jai. He had this spirit, so sooner the better ki, jai. Ayendra Prabhu ki, jai. Gaur Premanande.